Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Ponco Chicken. The new Atlanta restaurant thrives off of a unique spin on Japanese and Western cuisine and is already racking up the awards, winning best-selling taste in the Taste of Atlanta Awards both in 2017 and 2018. So if you're in the Metro Atlanta area and are wanting to try something new and good and delicious, go to Ponco Chicken today and tell them that I sent you over. You'll be glad you did, I promise. Ponco Chicken, where eats meets West.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. Welcome to a Monday night edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. I am now joined by someone that I've been watching, I've been reading for close to a decade. He's very old. I'm saying all of that and being very mean in this intro because he was just calling me a 9-year-old for my eating habits prior to recording. So I felt that this was not totally out of left field for me to call him out on this front. But it's the recently retired, now unretired, Beckley Mason of Hoop Speak Live, now of Bleacher Report. See, I saved it at the end with this intro.
There you go. Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for having
me. It's weird, man. I'm just excited because you are someone that... it's weird when I talk about like different things on basketball Twitter from it just now versus just years ago and how it's changed a lot. You're never really on Twitter anymore, but just
I'm lurking. I'm living by the three L's of Twitter.
What are those?
Look, like, and lurk. So I'm actually like still totally addicted to Twitter. Probably in like an unhealthy way. I just don't post. But I'm watching.
Okay. You're just watching. Good to know. Also kind of creepy. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm not here to sell, you know, a vision that isn't true.
Okay. You also get a first glimpse of what the news is going to be like the next day before anybody else with the skim. So you get an inside look there. You're ahead of the curve every single day, right?
That's
You're
true.
Just always lurking and ahead of the game, man.
That's what it's about. You realize at a certain point that you give all your ideas and thoughts away on Twitter. You're like such your life force. So that's I'm doing the opposite. I'm absorbing all the hate and craziness and then using it in the real world.
How is that working out for you?
Yeah, ups and downs, peaks and valleys.
Okay. Okay.
But it's I'm like extremely online and then have like all these, you know, references and stuff. And you have to just be careful where you bring up like how you saw something or what like funny video, you know, be like in polite company, you gotta like tone it down a little bit. So, you know, kind of like a closet Twitter addict, most of the day.
Is there a recent example where you realized that you were talking about something that no one else had any idea what you were talking about, and it was just because you've been scrolling through Twitter and there is just no one else for you to have that moment of, this is great, and I don't know who to talk to about this?
Well, one example is, and then, like, I saw this, and I didn't, you know, sometimes I'll, like, email, or sorry, not email, not quite that old.
You are in your 30s.
You know, like, a group text, you know, like, something funny that I see, but I saw this story of, and, like, this is a kind of, like, random shit that gets tweeted in your feed. I saw a story of a woman who was having a procedure done in Japan, internally, with like lasers, and who farted and like basically lit the laser on fire. So like I had that image in my mind with like basically nowhere to go for it. And that's like, that's the weird thing that Twitter does. If you're not really participating, is you like, you absorb all this stuff, but then you're not really like a part of the weird community in a true sense, because I'm not really posting at all. And as a result, you just like bottle that weirdness up. You like can't tell someone about that. That's not like, hey, like look at my phone on this thing I saw. So those are the sorts of moments that I have on a like multiple times a day, it seems.
And it's weird too, because I always just think that everybody's on Twitter, especially people my age, and the majority of people are not. And it's really strange, because it does feel like when I'm like you, where I'm scrolling and I'm looking at stuff, and there are just certain people that, well, I always like have, like Krang T. Nelson, I have to watch, I have to look at his stuff every day. And so like I have my uncle, weirdly enough, who is 30 years older than me, but is extremely online. He's a drummer in a band, so he's like in my like world and orbit kind of still, because he's still keeping up with all this kind of stuff, but no one
else
really is.
He's a cool uncle.
He's the cool uncle. Right.
Yeah.
And y'all are pretty close in age, I think, if he's 30 years older than me.
How dare you? How dare you?
This is fun. I'm going to see how many more ways I can find to take some more snipes at you for your age. I'm really hurt about the off-air conversation we had beforehand.
I know. Like, I did that in the privacy of a one-on-one conversation. You're just like, hey, okay, yeah, haha, and then like wait till we get on the podcast and then just start letting me have it. I see, you know, smart.
They don't call me the cerebral.
But it won't be forgotten.
For nothing. It won't be forgotten. I could see you being vindictive. That makes sense. Lurkers seem like they're more likely to be vindictive for stuff like this. The guys who watch Twitter all day long, waiting for their moment. Right. So I'm looking forward to June 7th when you counter me for all of this. That's going to be a good day. Just a random notification. Beckley Mason logged online for the first time in a month.
Try to dunk on Chase.
Exactly. But we know you don't dunk. You're just a shooter, right?
That is also super accurate. Yeah. Not a high flyer.
Okay. Not a high flyer. Neither am I. I can confirm I'm just the same way. Are we both like the stereotypical white basketball player where we could shoot, come off screens, press, annoy the shit out of people on defense?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would say, you know, my game evolved from trying to kind of play like a lot of off the dribble shooting. Like I went to a small high school, and we ran a lot of like four out drive and kick stuff. But then in my later years in like rec leagues in New York, I would describe myself more like, you know, like Mavs era, late Mavs Jason Kidd, just sort of moving the ball, getting people in the right spot, trying to make it easy for people. You really like when you start playing pickup a lot and like you're not playing super competitively and you're kind of playing in sort of like these ragged games, the value of just like being willing to keep the ball moving and like keep bodies moving and help people, you know, get good hit ahead passes where you're going to get in 3-on-3s instead of 5-on-5. Like that shit adds up. And it's, that's where I, you know, kind of realized like I could add the most value in those games was just like pure old man facilitation.
Interesting. I would have said at your age, you're like 2019 Dirk Nowitzki.
God damn it, Jason. I will not That's be good. Mocked.
No, this is, I gotta like break you back in, man. You're lurking, you're in the shadows, and you used to be at the forefront. You used to be like me, you used to be a young pup in basketball sphere. Mm-hmm. You were hosting HoopSpeak Live. You were doing the video. You're running HoopSpeak.com. Do you miss it?
You know, at times I think there's like, especially once I really ramped down and I wasn't, you know, writing during the playoffs and covering games, and they were sort of like, felt like there were conversations that were happening that I had been a part of and I wanted to remain a part of, but over time it just sort of like kind of the whole thing moves on from where we were. And like HoopSpeak Live is a great example where it was, you know, we were kind of at the vanguard of that. And you look at what it became in True Hoop TV, which I think we did, I did like a couple of the first iterations of that when we were really figuring out the format and the tech kind of wasn't very good. And that ended up being a, you know, staple franchise that Henry and the guys at Jade Hoy, you know, the people at ESPN drove. And then after that, and after, you know, everyone got let go by ESPN, then they continued it and it kind of took on its life in its own where it's not even like, I'm not even remotely connected to it. And it's cool that I got to be a part of the start of it and the time when, you know, Ethan and Zach and Amin were kind of getting going and Tom with that particular format. Obviously they kind of had their own careers well on their way by then, but it's wild to like, I went to a show in New York and saw the, you know, it's kind of the Jade Hoy variety show that he puts on, and it was cool. And I was like, man, where did all these people come from? And you know, lots of people, you can tell they have a ton of super fans. It's really cool how kind of vital it's become for a lot of people's NBA fandom.
Yeah, I mean, I love Back to Back and all that stuff, and I've been listening to them for years now. But I imagine, I didn't, like you, that's interesting, just looking back at like, oh, wow, things have changed, but some people are staying the same. Zach and Ethan seems like the same. Tom's really basically the same, but it all still works, and it's just the casting characters around them has changed, which is good. It keeps things fresh. I will say I'm surprised you have not made an appearance. Is it a BR thing as to why you haven't made an appearance?
No, I'm like, I'm just not I think I'm like basically too far in the past for them to like think of it as like, oh, we should have this person.
Well, that's what I'm doing right now. I'm bringing you back in. You're unretired. So now they're going to see Becky Mason popped up on the Chase Thomas podcast. Is he back in the basketball Twitter game? Like, what is going on here? He's doing media appearances?
Headlines tomorrow, I'm sure. Now, it would be fun. But like, honestly, I have like so little to add compared to everyone they have on now who's like so deep in not only like the culture of the NBA and what they're covering, but also like the culture of the show. You know, it's like they've so made it their own thing. I would feel kind of like an interloper.
No, you should jump back in. Jade, I know you're listening. He's another lurker. You can invite Beckley. I give you my approval. He's dusted off the cobwebs. He's ready to go.
There you go.
He's got to warm up, obviously, with the whole age thing. He's got to stretch for a good 20 to 30 minutes. He's got to
make
sure
yoga.
He doesn't pull anything. Mm-hmm. Yoga.
You never get older, yoga. you can't just play. You gotta train to play. Be healthy.
Mm. Right. And that's actually what this podcast is, a stepping stone. I've always said it was a stepping stone for bigger and better things.
Right. It's like when DeMarcus Cousins is playing in the G League, kind of getting it going, getting the blood flowing, and then next thing you know, right. I'll be dunking on Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm. That is that's right. Which is still kind of scary because we're always talking about what's going on with the Warriors now? Is this the end? Is this, can they overcome Draymond shooting 23% from deep and no one coming out to cover him, and Klay having a weirdly down year now that we're nearing the midway point? Then it's like, oh yeah, DeMarcus Cousins isn't even back yet. Like he's waiting in the wings. And then you get the Steve Nash's working out with their first round pick from Cincinnati. What's that dude's name? I already forgot his name. Jamal Evans. Is that it? Sounds right.
Maybe.
So, yeah, something like that. But I mean, they just let Patrick McCaw go, and that was like one of the saddest restricted free agency stories that no one cared about in the last couple of years.
Yeah, the picture of him in Cleveland, I think, kind of said it all. But like, he's got to just hate his agent after that, sort of the where that ended. Like, if he had just stuck it out, how much, you know, would he have been able to make and playing on a championship team for 3 years in a row instead of 2 years? He's still so young. There's like so many ways when you're in that position to make money besides like actually playing on the court. I mean, you just look at, someone like Josh Hart, who's definitely a really nice player and is good, but like he plays in LA and he plays with LeBron and it's made him a national figure. Where like people in the NBA know who Patrick McCaw is simply because he played on the Warriors. And yeah. I just think that they, you know, who am I to tell them what to do and what they thought was going to happen? And maybe there was something on the table that fell through, but the ancillary benefits of playing in a market like that, and if you have kind of the representation that knows how to get you out there as like a character beyond what you do on the court, if that's something he's interested in, like there's really only a few places where that's possible, and Golden State is one of them because they go to the finals every year.
Yeah, and now he's in Cleveland where they will not be in the finals this year. I don't think.
I do not believe so.
No,
are they mathematically eliminated yet?
It's a good. I mean, I think every Colin Sexton ISO mathematically eliminates them a little bit more. Oh, every
poor Colin.
Yeah, yeah. He's. He's so tough to watch. Like when I watched that game, like he does a lot for them. They give him free reign, which I don't know is a good thing for the kind of player that he is. Like he seems like there are some instances where it's like Steph Curry needs time to turn the ball over. He needs to feel things out. Like you have to let young guys play and kind of figure stuff out on the fly and play 30 minutes a night and be bad and just get better through failure. His stuff, like, I'm not sure the coaching is good. I'm not sure the situation around him is good enough for this all. Like, trading away George Hill is a little peculiar because, I mean, Colin Sexton is really their only intriguing young piece because Kevin Love, Larry Nance is sneaky old. And you look up and down that roster, Rodney Hood is not a long-term piece. And I'm just like, I think it's just Colin Sexton. And if they win the lottery again this year, oh my God. I mean, can we really rule out the Cavs just winning the lottery every like 3 years just because they're the Cavs and for whatever reason, Dan Gilbert deserves nice things when he really does not. But, I don't know. Colin Sexton's like a really interesting piece to me, long-term because I could easily see him turning into like this empty calorie 25 a game, in 4 years. I could also see him just being like Chris Dunn, where it's just like, this just is not good. He's a backup, but he thinks he's like a superstar. I don't know what this is.
Yeah, I mean, it's all, he's so young, and he's so big and like just has so many physical tools. I also like how hard he plays when he isn't, you know, having his soul crushed. I agree that the situation he's in is not doing him a ton of favors. I don't know how much he's going to be able to grow without in like sort of the Larry Drew run and gun. But I do think like got to give him time. And I think we just you would think that by now we would be used to people coming into the league at 19 and like playing right away. Like, I feel like when kids came out of high school and they're 18, they never really played right away. And they would really like give them 10 minutes a game here and there. And these kids come out of college where they're, you know, obviously playing against pretty inferior talent compared to the NBA and the travel schedule. And that's all the documented reasons why it's much more difficult to play in the league. And they just like start playing 34 minutes a night. And, you know, if Colin played 4 years and came in as a rookie, that would be 3 years from now. And Steph Curry, you know, really didn't come into his own in the league. Obviously, he was much better as a rookie than Colin is, but like until he was 23, 24 years old. So I think it's so hard to really evaluate these kids because it's not like, oh, let's give them a season or two. It's like, you don't really know what you have until you're 23, and that's like in 4 years. And they're going to be at that point, it's going to be, you're in that weird, like Drew Holiday zone where they've kind of had like an up and down first 4 years. And you're like, are you going to max them out or not? It's a really like weird system that's set up. Yeah, exactly. You kind of just have to do it. Cause that first max is not as bad. And you have like, basically the start of their prime and statistically going to be their most valuable seasons around 26.
You're just hoping that like they're average by the end of the first contract. And then you're like, okay, then they can, let's just pray to God they find another gear in the next contract. And we figured things out by that point. Like, it's like the Andrew Wiggins stuff that Minnesota's doing right now.
Yeah. They're just like, well, flashes. You know, look, there's a trend line here that says there's like what I see and I maybe like or don't like certain parts of that. There's a trend line and there's the fact that like he's still 22 or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so he could, you know, usually players get a lot better between 22 and 26. And if that happens with him, then he, you know, you look at the trend line, you think it's going to be here. And then you also, for all those, you have the Tyreek Evans who just sort of like are good players but don't really mature into cornerstones. It's just such a weird like schedule. Like, you would really want to just evaluate someone probably at like 16, at 20, and 24. And instead it's like you evaluate them at 19 and 23 and or 22. And so it's like you're just missing like these inflection points in growth and development. And that's just kind of the way that it sort of arbitrarily lands because of the NCAA.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's part of the reason that people just write off all, like, the Josh Harts of the world, where it's like, oh, we know what he is. He's in the league. We saw him 4 years at college. We know he's going to be a role player like Jalen Brunson, all those guys who come in the late first, where it's just, we know exactly what this player is. We've seen this before. You're polished. You've spent time at wherever, like all the Michigan State dudes, it seems like, too, fall into this category. The North Carolina guys who can't go in the lottery, so they stay in school for a lot of years. And then at 22, teams just kind of know what they have and they're not really worried about the development and maxing those guys out because they just kind of the JJs and everybody else, it's like, you're gonna be a role player, we don't have to worry about you. But the other ones who come in at 18, 19 in the lottery or late lottery that are still super young, those are the ones that they spend time on because just that's the big unknown. But it seems like if you come in a few years later, they already assume that this is probably about what you're going to be, and it's not like you're going to have some gigantic leap if you played in college for 4 years.
Yeah, which is fair to a degree, but I think you touched on something, which is like you can't, I think everyone is pushed by their competition. And so you start playing better people. And if you're like Josh is a great example, like you find the things that you can do well at this level and then you create a career out of them. You know, I think he's like great straight line drives to the basket off of ball reversals and like spot up shooting. And then making those sort of hustle plays. And he's not posting up like he was in college. He's not ISOing and just taking someone down to the block and kind of getting into his footwork on the in the low post and getting buckets. Like, he's being a, but he kind of early on figured out, like, here's where I contribute, and he is smart about how he focuses. He's a super smart kid. Actually,
yep.
Coached him briefly in DC when he was in high school, and and he's like making it. I was curious, like, how his athleticism. He's not obviously he was a freak athlete in high school, but like even seeing him in college, you're like, okay, this isn't the most athletic guy on the court. So I was wondering how he's going to stack up with the wings. He's not huge. He's not super athletic, but he knows how to use his body, and he knows how to read the game, and he's figured out that he can do those things even at this highest level. And that's something that you, there's, I just don't know how you evaluate that until you see it to a degree.
Yeah, and it's interesting the parallels between him and the guy whose job he basically took in KCP, because KCP played 1 year at Georgia and got into the lottery, and teams, it's like the Malik Monk types where it's just, they're, you don't love a lot of what they did in college, but you're like, you know, maybe if he gets in the right system, he develops in the NBA, he can have a higher upside than just a role player and actually be a go-to scorer and a big-time player. But that's just not what happens for a lot of these guys. Teams just take those guys because they're 19 and they're like, well, they're intriguing. And then Josh Hart comes in 4 years in, he knows what he is, you know, he's efficient, he's learned things. But it took teams like 6 years to figure out KCP is just a bench guy, a seventh or eighth guy, not someone you can count on big time. And I mean, J.R. Smith and a lot of those guys, just they get more of a benefit of the doubt because they just, the clock starts earlier for them. And
yeah, well, I would put J.R. as sort of another category skill wise, but I hear what you're kind of getting at. I think the one thing about Josh is like he got better every year he was at Villanova. And that I always think is like a really interesting sign when someone just like, obviously they should be getting better because you're getting older and the competition is staying the same age, but also, you know, it shows that he's developing year over year, which, you know, who knows from that's like, you basically, if you're someone like KCP in high school, you're a freak. Like nobody is even near your level of athleticism.
Lou Williams. So it's like, was the same way.
How do you?
I watched him in person. Yeah. It's the same kind of thing where you're like, how is this guy not going to be a star in the NBA? And then you're like, oh, when you play actually a bunch of guys who are just as big and just as tough and just as strong, it's a little bit different.
But Josh is also an interesting case just because he, and obviously I'm like invested in his success and really stoked for him. But like when he went to Villanova, he was a three-star recruit. Maybe he was a four-star recruit. But like he was a 6'5" forward when he got to Villanova, and he played, but he went to a place where he had a coach who was going to have a 5-out system, and where a 6'5" forward could grow into a 6'5" 3, who could grow into a 6'5" 2 by the time he was a senior, who could really like fulfill those duties as a shooter. You know, learned over the course of his time at Villanova to get the ball up, get his wrist under the ball a little bit more. And if he goes to UNC, like maybe he plays 10 minutes a game, you know, his senior year, maybe he doesn't really get on the court the same way, but he went to a place with a system that really suited his sort of all around talent, and it allowed him to grow year over year. And I think it's just, we look at a lot of kids as kind of like they have it or they don't, and he was one watching it where I was like, man, the system he went to, the opportunities he had to grow there, and the coaching he got, I mean, Jay is a phenomenal coach, like that's a special path that he was on and that he pushed himself through, where a lot of guys like Malik, like who knows if he stays for 4 years at Kentucky, is he averaging 28 points a game his senior year, you know what I mean? Like, is he really,
you could see it,
growing year over year? Maybe, but like maybe he's just kind of hitting 19 points a game on a lot of threes every game, every season.
You're basically betting on John Calipari, right? Like, you're betting on the coach to figure things out with him. Like, James Young is one of those dudes who, like, if you watch that tournament run, you're like, oh, this dude's going to be a thing in the NBA. And then, it obviously, it did not happen. But you wonder if he continued to work at Kentucky for a couple more years. But then you don't, like, I would never recommend a player who could go get paid in the lottery or in the first round to stay. Like, it's just bad. It's just bad business. So they're kind of in a lose-lose situation in that regard, where it's like, do I stay and develop for free and get exploited in this regard and risk injury, or do I go get paid and bet on myself to develop and at the NBA level? And it's a huge risk, but and there's also no guarantees by you staying for a couple more years that you're going to improve all that much. It turns out none of this is easy, and there's a lot of nuance. Beckley, who knew?
As you know, I live on Twitter, so this is like the most I've ever talked about anything. It's because I've just been like observing. Well, see, the other thing you do when you don't post ever is like you just silently hate. You just see stuff you don't like, and you just think to yourself,
"You've got to give me a recent example. Give me an NBA take that you saw on Twitter you were just like, fuming over."
Let me open Twitter right now, see if I can find something. I'm sure there's
something. Honestly, going to pretend that you haven't been scrolling this whole time? I get the vibe that you're a Twitter junkie to an extreme.
No, not that bad. I have the championship game on in the background playing on silent.
Gotcha.
Imagine Dragons. How about that?
Imagine Dragons.
Let's
what?
See here. They
oh, is that what you're listening
show.
To last?
Well, I wasn't listening to them, but I'm like, they perform the halftime show. They have, like, they're one of those bands that you want to hate, but they just, and you have to respect, they just put out bangers, like, that people love. Like, they maybe not for me, maybe not something I want to listen to or will be showing up in my Spotify, but, like, they show up at a halftime show and they're like, okay, yeah, I've heard all of their songs a bajillion times. Like, they're just everywhere.
I thought they only had the one
song.
That's
my thought. That's my take
on that. The radioactive
thing. Dragons.
I mean, that's what I was here for. I wanted a little NBA, but more Imagine Dragons than anything else from Beckley Mason on a Monday night. So I appreciate that.
Well, anyway, what else do you want to talk about?
Oh, did you not find the tweet? I was waiting on your tweet.
We can cut this out. I'm not going to scroll through. It's distracting me. I'm going to be in the moment with you, Chase.
I appreciate that. And it's also a little concerning. And the way you said that kind of set me back a little bit. So I'm going to have to recalibrate for a second. But because that's a lot of pressure on me, Beckley. And I thought I had the pressure on you based on where this conversation started. But the tables have turned because you, the host in you, has come back. It's risen from the ashes as a phoenix does, you know.
Yeah, well, I've little to gain or lose from this other than the pleasant exchange of conversation. So, you know, the pressure's on you because you're, you know, I guess going somewhere.
You're going with me now. You're on this journey. Your name will be forever attached to the Chase Thomas podcast, Beckley. So, like it or not, you're a part of this rise.
That's what I spent those nights blogging, hoping one day I would rise.
No, I mean, you wouldn't be the first NBA writer.
What's that?
You wouldn't be the first NBA writer to just subconsciously think about being on my podcast. Yeah, and just kind of being a part of this slow, but, I mean, very worth it ride to the top. I mean, this is the best up-and-coming sports podcast on the internet. I don't know if you knew that or not, Beckley, but I don't think you would have done
that
this
in the description.
You didn't hear good things. Say it again.
Is that in the description?
No, it's just a
like
lot
if
of
I
the things.
I would say that. Sorry.
Irrelevant, Beckley. Irrelevant. Give me your hottest NBA take you have right now. We're at the midway point in the season, basically. Give me something that you've been thinking about that you're just like, you know, I haven't had the outlet to say this.
I wouldn't put it exactly that way, but the only thing that I really, really want to know about at this point in the season, like I can kind of like, okay, yeah, we got a bunch of good teams, let's get to the playoffs, is the true story of Markelle Fultz. Like, nothing is as interesting to me still as, like, what actually is going on, what happened with his trainer, what happened, like, I saw him at UW. I'm from Seattle. I went home and went to a game when he was a freshman and saw him just murder, I think, Seattle University. They played at Heck Edmondson Pavilion when I was there, and it was like, this kid's, he blocked, I think, like, three shots off the backboard. He had a couple alley-oops. He was hitting, you know, making beautiful passes, knocking down jumpers. I was like, this kid is on another planet compared to the competition here. He's so smooth and explosive. And so I thought, maybe not a sure thing, but there's no way he wasn't going to be a really effective player. And so to see him crumble like this and to see such a talent not be able to find its way, medical, emotional, personal, psychological, I'm just like, I think it's just fascinating. And I hope it works out, and I really am rooting for him. But to me, that's the most fascinating thing in the NBA right now.
I think it's over. I said it was over like a year and a half ago. Like, once the Yip stuff came out, you're like, oh, this is done. Like, there were certain stuff with Anthony Bennett, and it's just, there's not going to be a story. Like, just the idea, trying to think just 15 years from now.
You can't compare Anthony Bennett to this guy.
I'm not comparing him, but I'm saying that there are picks where you just see, like, little things, like Ryan Leaf. You see, like, little things at the beginning where you're like, oh, yeah, this is absolutely.
But Ryan Leaf was, like, addicted to pills and alcohol.
Saying, right. It's like he had other issues.
Like, what would you say the thing is here?
I would say the thing is mental.
But how?
Like,
but that's
all this
that's,
comes
that's
down
what
to
I'm
stuff
getting
because
at is you can't
he's been cleared.
Really,
right? Like
you can't see inside his noggin. You know what I mean? Like, it's
right.
That's why this is fascinating to me, is because it's someone. Yeah. I'm just, maybe it is over. I hope not. Maybe he goes somewhere else and it works out. But like,
but what's works out? Because he was the number one overall pick, and he was like someone who was supposed to be the final piece to a contender. Like, that was the thing, is like, if he works out for him at this point, it's like role player. Like, maybe he becomes Rick Cankiel. Like, that's the closest comp, is like what happened with him, where he was this prize baseball prospect and then he had no control anymore and he couldn't figure it out. And then he switched positions to center field and had a weirdly long career out in center for the Washington Nationals and different teams like that. And it was he never lived up to what he started out as a pitcher, but he still had a solid career. I mean, that's the best case, is he just turns into like an okay seventh or eighth guy, like a Sean Livingston maybe down the road when he figures it all out. But like, do I think he can ever become a superstar? No, I think that's all gone. Like, that would just be, that'd be the best sports story maybe of like all time. A dude who had the yips and the start to his career that Fultz has had to end up becoming a superstar would be amazing, and that's what I think we should all be rooting for. But I don't think that's where this is going. I think if I, like, would you bet on Markelle Fultz being in the NBA in 2020?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not a ton.
I wouldn't bet on him. I would bet him in the G League. Like, I could see him floating and trying. And we like hear these stories that he's going to keep going. He's not giving up. He's hoping the shot comes back. Because I think that's going to be the story. Like, it's going to be like October next year. And they're like, Markelle's still working stuff out. We'll still see the YouTube clips. We'll still see the Twitter stuff where it's like, he's still working. It's a work in progress. Maybe he's hitting corner threes at a crazy rate. Because you'll see those videos. I mean, this whole offseason was like, the shot looked good, right? And then you watch those free throws that he was taking at the beginning of the year. And he could still pass, because if you watch those Sixers games, his vision was still good. He was still able to read defenses pretty well. He was trying on defense. He wasn't good, but at least he was trying. And it was weird stuff like the free throws, where the motion and all that. You're like, what is this? Like, how does this happen?
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know how you fix all of that on the fly with so much pressure on him, especially in Philadelphia. Like, I don't think it gets fixed there. Like, the way they were chanting for him,
I think
Philly fans meant well. But that's awful. Like, that's one of those set. Like, this is the number one overall pick. This is not like TJ McConnell, where that makes total sense. Like, if TJ goes off for 40, you give him a standing ovation and you yell, TJ, TJ. That's what you do. Like, that's TJ McConnell. That's insane. And he would appreciate it. But not the number one overall pick who you traded Jason Tatum for. Like, that's just, you can't do it. And, I mean, it sealed it. What sucks the most is, like, the Sixers fans, because I think it sealed their fate kind of as a contender over the next 5 to 10 years. Because if Fultz works out, Fultz, Embiid, and Simmons is just a terrifying, like, whatever Fultz could be, what we thought he was going to be, like what you saw at Washington, if that translated to the NBA at an elite level, like, that diversity and skill sets with Fultz, Simmons, and Embiid would be terrifying. And then, like, have spot up shooters around those guys like JJ and everybody else, like, that's a contender for 5 to 10 years in the NBA, at least. Now Joel Embiid is their best player by a lot, and I'm not a believer that a big guy can be the best player on a championship team. Like, Kawhi, Giannis, Steph, KD, LeBron, Harden, though, there's a reason that all the best players and all the teams that are playing in the Western Conference and Eastern Conference Finals are not big guys. You just can't. I don't think you should build around big guys. That's why I'm pretty out on Zion as my number one over pick. I would take RJ every single time. Like, that big guys scare me. Like, Joel Embiid, it should not be your linchpin. He should be your backup option. As, like, if your league guard is not a superstar, then, I mean, sure, try with Joel Embiid. I wouldn't have gone Ayton. You see what Luka Doncic is doing right away in Dallas. You see all these guys who make an impact. And I think, like, Portland, Washington, when you have two lead ball handlers who are both top 20 in the NBA, it matters. You stay relevant for a long time. Donovan Mitchell, the list goes on and on and on. And now I think Philly's capped. Like, Jimmy Butler is fine. I like Jimmy Butler a lot. They can't win a title with Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid. It just can't happen. So at that point, you're just like, oh man, Philly fans went from the process is complete to, I mean, we'll be pretty good for 3 to 5 years, maybe. It's sad.
Yeah. I don't know about all that, to be honest. Like, I think it's pretty rare that teams are legit contenders for a 5 year period. Like, there's usually only one or two every 10 years that is truly doing
that. Can I make the case we're going to have at least five of those teams right now? The Bucks, Giannis.
Yeah.
What he's doing right now. Giannis, like, if Bud and Giannis are together for the next 3 to 5 years, do you see any point where Giannis, at the level he's playing at under that contract with that group, they fall out of contention for the NBA Finals for the next 3 to 5 years?
But, like, are you putting them at the same level as the 76ers, or, like, recognizably different? But, like, marginally or significantly?
I think it's marginal. I think that top four is marginal.
And do you think
different.
That they're actual contenders to win a title or to go to the finals in the East?
To go to the finals.
Okay, so we're not really calling them contenders.
I think it counts. I think you have to consider them contenders if you make the finals. No matter what. Like, you're still a contender because you never know what's going to happen. Like, somebody gets hurt, all that kind of stuff. You never know. You just, I think... If
right,
you get but
there, we're talking about it in the loose sense of, like, they could be the Knicks in the 90s, where it's like they have 1 year where MJ's out and they push the Rockets to 7, but for the most part, like, they're going to conference finals.
Well, hold on.
I guess my
Latrell
point
Sprewell
is that, like,
did bring them to the NBA finals in that lockout year. Who could forget that?
That was a whole different roster, though. But you get what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Like,
yes.
The actual contending is a different thing, and I think I guess you need to have phenomenal playmakers, right? Like, whether that person is 7 feet tall, like Kevin Durant, or, you know, is more Steph sized, like, or Harden sized.
Right, you need
size,
wings and
you
guards.
You need to have people who can do that. Yes, but the teams that will punish the Warriors and will, I think, still, like, the difference between kind of having a chance to be a true title contender, like, you still have to be able to win in the paint. And that's why I think, like, even the LeBron teams that, like, look at even, like, the Lakers, right? Like, they're running every darn thing through LeBron, who's still so efficient in the half court and in the full court. And, you know, you still want him making as many decisions for your team as possible. Like, you gotta have a guy who controls the play above the rim, and the Warriors are lucky because they can they basically have Draymond and Steph who can both play that, or not Steph, sorry, KD, who can both play that role, even though they're not like traditional fives, which gives them the capability to play a certain way. But like Houston without Clint Capella is not very compelling. Like, I still think you need basically someone like Capella is not Steph impact level, but like you need that Ben Wallace character, I still think, in order to take out some of the and like compete with the best NBA offenses.
They should be stars, right? And you, like, they should be secondary third option. Like, that's the thing, is they can't be your best. They can't, Joel Embiid cannot be your best player. Like, you can't have guys like that as your number one best player. I just don't think you can.
Well, it depends on what else you have around them, right? Like, you can have your number one best player being incredible ball handler, and then you have Capella, who's a great defender. But I do think you can have Embiid or Anthony Davis as a phenomenal defender. Embiid's not really in that same class, but as a tremendous defender who is maybe not like a primary ball handler, but if you get real like talented primary ball handlers around him, which they haven't really done, that's fine for him to be your best player. I guess I'm not, I hear what you're saying. Like, you need to have shooting in the NBA for sure, but I'm not convinced that size isn't still a huge component.
Size matters. I just think it's more of like, it also just seems like it's just a math thing of like, who brings the ball up the most, who controls the offense the most,
sure,
who controls the way the games go. It's the guy who has the ball in his hands a bunch. That's what makes Steph so incredibly valuable, is he's the guy bringing the ball up and you never know what he's going to do with it. I just think bigs are, no matter what, even if you're a superstar or freak of nature like Anthony Davis, Joel Embiid, whoever, they're always going to be at a disadvantage because they just don't control how often they get the ball. Lead guards, lead forwards, those kind of Kawhis, Giannis, they all control how dominant they want to be. Sometimes Anthony Davis and Joel Embiid will not be able to control it. Nick Jokic, everybody else. Like Denver, they're the best team in the West, but I feel like their ceiling is defined by what Jamal Murray and Gary Harris become, not what Jokic becomes. I think people like Paul Millsap, like you said, I know you like it. He's been incredible. Like, their defense, the on-off numbers, the defensive rating, everything with him is a difference maker. Even though Jokic is also weirdly placing well defensively in every stat category. So I think it's interesting. But at the same time, if Gary Harris becomes like that, remember that Chris Herring piece from a year and a half ago where it's like, could he be the next Kawhi Leonard? Like, that's what they need, is Gary Harris to become a superstar. If he or Jamal Murray to become Kyrie Irving, that's what they need. If that happens, they're contenders in the West. If both just are solid B-plus players, they're not even close. And that's a problem. But hey, they're still really good and they're really fun. And that's what makes Denver so interesting, is they're both shooting below 35% from three right now. And the reason the Nuggets are killing people is because their bench is really good and Paul Millsap and Nikola Jokic are very good on the court together. But also Monte Morris has that crazy turnover to assist ratio, shooting 45% from three. And you go up and down the list, their role players are all performing really well, but their starters, especially in the backcourt, aren't. So you would figure that that will change. And then it's like, well, then what do they become at that point? But ultimately, I just look at what your guards and wings look like. And if you have one or two stars there, then you have a shot. If you don't, I think you have to start over.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, you've seen the limitations of Portland in the playoffs, for sure, which is pretty, you know, it's tough when your best players are under 6'3 or under 6'4. Like, that also is pretty hamstringing, because when you need a layup, you don't have a single person who can get it without going through people who are much bigger than them. Interestingly, Kawhi and Anthony Davis have identical usage rates this year. I just looked that up.
And guess who is number one in their conference? Not Anthony Davis and his team.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's
it's Kawhi Leonard in Toronto. And by the way, I have Toronto winning the NBA Finals. I think they're winning it all this year. I said that before. I'm sticking to
bananas.
It.
Bananas. Wow.
Nope. Okay. Hey, would you like to know how many teams have won five straight NBA Finals?
five. Are they up to five? I think this would this be will be three? Five.
No, this would be five straight. Five they've been to the finals.
Going to the finals.
Yes. How many times
but
that's happened?
It would be four straight. Would be three straight winning.
It'd be three straight winning. Okay. It'd be five straight going to.
So
the
there's
finals.
Some precedent for that.
There's only been one other team that's done that. The Boston Celtics in the 60s.
Yeah. How many teams have had Steph Curry before?
I'm not betting on them making it through. There's something wrong, man. There's something
man,
where it's like.
No one in the West.
I don't think it's
think
the West. The thing
the
is,
Golden
I think they're going to go to the finals.
Yeah.
Kawhi is going to eat them. Like, that group is so smart, and I love Siakam. I love their depth. I love the way they play. If Kawhi's healthy, man, and Danny Green is so good for them, Kyle Lowry is shooting lights out. I gobbled up all the Toronto stock before the year, and just seeing Kawhi healthy and just murdering people is just, it's very fun. I love watching Kawhi
yeah,
be.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal player. I do think I'm just not going to bet. So if the Warriors are healthy, I think that they, yeah, I just don't know who on that rap, like besides Kawhi, who I really trust in the playoffs to like find another level. And maybe they won't
Do you
have
know who
to,
I don't
but
trust
they,
right
to
now?
Me, they look, huh?
James Harden, because of what he's having to do over the last month. Have you watched anything he's done? Like this 40 point, like he's averaging 40 a game over like his last, what, five or 10,
yeah.
something like that? I watched the full Blazers game. Some of the step backs and just the bit, like the way he finds his way in and just he never catches and shoots at all. Like all of his threes are basically like pull ups, like the hardest shots in basketball. And he's so efficient at them. And just some of the stuff that he'll pull up with, like it's absurd what he's pulling up.
Yeah, I think it's crazy underrated how fit he is. Like he must be
yes.
so crazy in shape. And he's kind of got that look that you always think he's maybe not as fit as everybody else, you know, who is a mm-hmm. little more naturally slender. But like that dude, like he's basically playing one-on-one. If, you know, you play basketball and you play one-on-one, you play like that is so exhausting playing one-on-one versus like five-on-five. And he basically is going one-on-one with one-on-four, one-on-five with the ball in his hand for 40 minutes a night. Like,
yes.
that is, I hope that they can find a way to get him some rest. Not that that's ever been D'Antoni's MO, but like, I just don't
well,
want him
Austin
to get
Rivers
hurt.
Now.
Yeah, well, the savior. I just
he's
don't want
well,
to get
though,
hurt
for them.
Because
he's weirdly
he's
knocking down
a
lot
yeah,
of shots.
He's
fine.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, he's a good athlete. He's got good size. He kind of knows where to be for the most part.
He's
like,
not Michael Carter Williams. That's a plus.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, but I just really like am worried about Harden's health.
I am too.
Like he's just playing so many minutes,
and he's just killing people. Like I just think that people should at least, if you have not had the opportunity to watch James Harden play a full game of basketball in the last couple of weeks, please do that because it's an insane thing to watch. And you would give him the MVP today if you watch what he's doing.
It's almost like unrecognizable from like normal basketball just because he is so incredibly vital to like every moment. Every time I see a highlight, I immediately scan the bench and like scan the other players for any sign of like, enough already, and it, I don't know, man. The role players look comfortable with it. They look bought into letting him do his thing. And I guess it's easier when he's doing his thing, you know, to the tune of 40 points and 10 assists every night. But like, it is pretty wild that the lives that these like the PJ Tuckers are living, where it's like, I'm just gonna play my ass off on defense. I'm gonna set some screens. I'm going to hopefully catch an open shot. And then when it comes to me, I better knock that thing down because I may not see the ball again for a few minutes.
Yeah. But it also lets those guys off the hook too. Like that's the other thing. It's like people are like, oh, I'd hate playing with James Harden. If you're a star, I would hate playing with James Harden because of what he does. Like you're like, I can do more. I would get frustrated. being in that kind of role. But if I'm Gerald Green or I'm PJ Tucker or I'm whoever, it's amazing. Like Clint Capella, he's going to get you paid. Like he's going to make things easy for you. He's going to shield you from a lot of criticism. He's going to be the guy, he's the insulator. Like he just takes all of it and it makes your job a lot easier. And it, I think if, I don't know, I've never really understood that argument for role players. I think he is like the perfect guy to play next to role players because he is just so critical to every single possession and makes your job easier because you're going to get better looks because he simply exists on the court.
Well, logically speaking, that is true. But, you know, the vast majority of these role players spent their whole lives getting to shoot as much as they wanted.
Yeah. They just need to talk to me for a little bit. Let me sit them down and be
but
like...
PJ is the kind of guy who, like, even in college, he was sort of a dirty work player. So he's had, you know, but he knew what it was going to be when he got to the league. Clint's the guy who, you know, has basically known no other life in the NBA. And seems like his game has always been, you know, being a great hand running and jumping. And so I think they've, it seems like they've assembled a lot of the right personalities. And I don't know why, like I have no logical sort of explanation for why I feel this way. But like, I just root for Eric Gordon. Like, I don't know. There's something about his look
this
and how
been
he
hard
plays
for you, then.
And, well, yeah, exactly. Like, I was so happy for him last year. And I love his attitude. And he's, like, got one of those Gilbert Arenas, like, huge frames where he just gets his shoulder on you and can just kind of lean past and lay it in. I don't know, man. Something about that dude, you know, you just have those guys that you love to watch and you love to see succeed. And Gordon is one of those guys for me. So, yeah, this year's been a bummer, but I hope he, you know, can at least have an impact because like really cool, really fun player for me to watch.
All right. A couple more quick things. Then we'll go. League Pass favorite right now. If you have to turn on League Pass tonight, who do you want to watch?
Let me confess something to you, man. I don't even have Pass anymore.
How is that even possible? You were for a Bleacher Report. I'll cut this. Hold on. Let me make a timestamp. I'll cut this.
The people can know. The people can know that, you know, when I got out the game, I got out the game. And I still love it. But, you know, like I'm not staying up to watch Utah and Denver play from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. anymore. Like, it's just not happening. And, you know,
I got Nets Hawks at 8:30, and then I'm
Knicks
done.
And I got the you know, the like whatever the national games are, and I'll like tune in occasionally or like go to a friend's house to like watch a big matchup. But to be honest, like when you work for, you know, 10 hours a day or whatever, you like, I don't want to just. I don't know, man. It kind of all blends together when you're not writing about it and you're less invested in every moment. Like, I watched how Ethan, you know, got into his sort of gambling picks, and you can tell that it reinvigorated sort of like his relationship with the NBA. Like, thinking about it in that specific way, I think he was getting mentally sort of a little bit tired, a little like he'd had enough with like the kind of grind of just covering games, and this gave him a new lens and a new reason to care about those details. And so now I'm just mainly watching for like aesthetic pleasure because I'm not analyzing it. I can't do it halfway where I'm like, sometimes I'm breaking down thinking about like out of bounds plays and crap like that, and other times I'm just like mindlessly watching basketball. It's hard to kind of be in the middle, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to bring you... This is step
one. Sorry
that
didn't disappoint
you. Into the minutia.
Sorry that disappointed you.
Jesus.
Well, it's the truth,
unbelievable.
Man.
Unbelievable.
You gotta confront the truth in this day and age.
Are we sure that it's just you don't know how to operate League Pass? That, like, you don't know how to use smart TVs
in that
regard?
Son of a bitch. I was...
So, there are smart TVs.
I was using League Pass when you were in short pants, Sonny.
I don't think that's true, because I don't think League Pass existed. I think you were just like recording stuff on VHS tapes, and you were
I'm from like the old days of when, I don't know, does League Pass still have the same music? Like League Pass used to have the most hilarious, like basically like 90s like Sega Genesis music that they would play when they went to timeout.
Yeah, it's
they
all
kept
still
that awful. That's good. Mm-hmm. No, that's important.
I mean, League Pass sucks. Let's be clear. League Pass does suck. It's just like I don't like it. It's a bad service.
You know, I used to be able to expense it. It was, I didn't pay for it. And then after a while, I was like, man, I'm not really ever going
to
use
this
in a way where I'd like.
Turner doesn't have the money for you to expense Bleacher Report, or to expense League Pass. So. I can,
you know, actually, you're just reminding me, this is not, swear to God, this is not like to plug it, but I have like a employee code for BR Live, which includes League Pass. So I guess I actually could watch it. Shit. I should be doing that.
That's
right, let me hang up.
You know what that is? We call that a very old guy thing to realize, oh, I had a coupon for that. That down there on my wall that I'd forgotten about.
Hey man, when you're right, you're right. Can't fight you on that one.
Yeah. I'll show you how to use codes and like type that in. So basically, like when you have like an omelet.
that's one level of internet that I'm very comfortable with.
Well, the good thing is you're not in charge of like digital programming or anything like that during the day. So
no, I'm not. With technology. I am actually not a part of that. So you know, there's like legitimate young children who run that, and that's why Bleacher Report looks and sounds like it does, because like hire a shitload of 23-year-olds and they, you know, infuse it with what they're actually caring about and what they're actually doing. I am like an old head at the office. It's pretty funny, like the vast majority of people who work there are under 30.
I just imagined like people going into an interview room, like this like long line of people trying to work at Bleacher Report, and all they look at on the resume is the birth date. It's like, 22, get the fuck out of here. Because we're hiring only a shitload
of 23-year-olds.
Yeah,
exactly. You're 25. You've been ruined. No, it's...
It's like the same stuff with the NBA. Everything's full circle. It's like the Josh Hart thing where you're looking for Josh Harts. You don't want any KCPs you have to groom over there at Bleacher Report. You don't have time for these 19-year-olds. You're ready for the finished product.
Yeah, and if there's anyone who's a finished product, it's a 22-year-old. I could say, I mean, like, it's funny, like, yeah, anyway. People will show up for interviews at BR with, you know, like in a suit or something. I always feel so bad because like it's a good thing to do. It never leaves a bad impression, but it's also like the office is so casual and young feeling. And when someone shows up, like you see it on their face and they look around, they're just like, oh man, I shouldn't have worn this suit. But it's like,
well, to be fair, it's hard to read,
suit.
Man. That's a new
it.
Thing. That's a real thing. I've done that where like I've been overdressed. Like it's a terrible feeling, but you also don't really know. Like a lot of that, you just, like you said, you can't go wrong, but it's also you stand like it's, man, it's a different world. It used to just be just suit and tie all the time. Like I remember having a conversation with my dad about it, of just him being like, you're not wearing a suit and tie. I'm like, no. And he's like,
yeah, but then like my boss like wants people to be dressed up. So like when they interview with me or with someone, one of my reports, and we're like, okay, you know, you can keep it casual. But if I know we're kind of sending them to like the final check-in, I'll be like, hey, you know, get a little, you know, tuck your shirt in, like maybe wear a collar, you know, try to be a little bit more buttoned up in this one part of it. Not that it really has a bearing on, you know, what, whether you're gonna be able to do your job properly, but it does reflect like a sort of certain level of being able to be client facing or whatever else it is that is important to set, to be able to just show you have that gear of like sort of conventional workplace attire.
Right. I mean, you are Mr. Skim, so you should have some level of decorum about you, right?
Well, you know, she, Carly will dress me as needed for events. You know, I'm always just like, what do you need me in? All right, great. I'll be there.
Interesting. Okay. Last thing, and then we'll go. If you had a choice between, you're a Seattle guy, if you had a choice between an expansion team. So the NBA goes from 30 to 32, and one of the two new teams is Seattle, the other obviously being like Montreal or Vegas, one of the two. I prefer Montreal. Or would you just rather have the Pelicans move to Seattle and keep things at 30?
Man, it's a tough one. You know, I would probably prefer expansion, even though... So I actually had like a whole conversation with Howard Beck at the office about this recently, and I said this.
He's been on the podcast, by the way, a couple months ago.
Oh, well, yeah, what are you doing talking to me if you can get someone like Howard? But we were talking about it, and he was saying, like, you know, the NBA is already too diluted. It shouldn't, you know, you're basically going to just make it a worse product. And I guess to a degree that's true. But I also, I would say, like I said, like, I don't watch League Pass. And so I just watch the games I want to. You know, I'm not like binging every night. So I'm just watching like the good games when they come up. And to me, those are about the top seven players on each team anyway. And I don't think it would make that big of a difference at the tippy top. I think what you would get is a few more like just true stinkers every year. But I would probably prefer to have it be sort of a guilt-free arrangement where I don't have to feel bad about us taking some other team. Unless we got the
Thunder. You don't feel like, bad about the Pelicans. It's the smallest market in basketball. They shouldn't have a team. Like, I love Pelicans fans. Don't get me wrong. It just, they should not have a team. It's just too small.
Yeah,
you have Anthony Davis. Like, they just shouldn't.
Totally fine.
If it's a choice between Seattle and New Orleans, it should be in Seattle. Like, that's just, it just should. And I don't know. I feel
you
bad.
You could say that
New
about
Pelican
Milwaukee.
Fans,
you could say that
wrong.
About, yeah. No, I agree.
Market.
That's all. Oh, come on.
That's
all fine.
Top 20 market.
A top what?
20. It's his top 20 city market. We can get Ethan on. And I remember he was a big city market guy. I am pretty sure for television, they're a top 20 market. Sacramento's sneaky in the top 20 as well. New Orleans is like 63rd. I think the next closest is
right.
Memphis.
They're down there.
And then
OKC is
somewhere
City,
there.
Like, yeah. That's the only team that I would want to come back is Oklahoma City. Like, if they just like
what
made
if,
that right and they were like, okay, we're just sending
well, if there's
it back,
anything you can bet on, it's Clay
all the
Bennett
hardware
making
up.
Things right. I could see the oil man making things
happening.
Right.
I'm just saying that's the circumstances. Like otherwise, yeah, I would be totally fine and probably prefer to just have an expansion. But yeah,
what
I
if,
guess like to be honest, I don't have a super strong feeling other than Oklahoma City should give us our team back.
Okay. What if a team goes back in Seattle in the next 4 years? Are you moving back to Seattle?
Yeah, I'm going to move back to be you know, president of basketball operations. I've already worked
awesome.
It out with
Phil
the
Jackson.
City, so I'll just take yeah, more of like exactly like kind of a figurehead Magic Johnson type role is what I see for myself.
I could see it. Someone who hasn't watched League Pass, watches barely any NBA anymore. Someone
yep.
who's very engaged
yep.
in the current product. I think you'd be perfect.
Right?
You actually might be
just
Young
put,
Phil. That's your new name. Young Phil Jackson.
That's how my knees feel sometimes. Am I right?
Yeah.
Or am I right?
Exactly.
Yeah, no.
You could rage against the millennials, all that kind of stuff, man. I think this all works.
It's actually kind of depressing that like when they're going to get a team at some point in my lifetime. I'm pretty confident about that. But like
they just got the hockey team.
Yeah, they just got an arena. But like when by the time that happens, like I'm too old. I don't wear jerseys. I don't like wear team stuff anymore. Like I've
well,
missed
fair,
that. I've missed
jerseys.
The window to like really enjoy that as like a young person who gets a team and then you get really excited.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just like, oh, my friend had a baby. I'm going to buy them the new Sonics jersey. That's like, that would be like my investment in like the merch and sort of team story.
Well, I mean, at your age, wouldn't it be your
washed.
Friend's sons? What? Wouldn't it be like your great nephew or something like that? Because I think you already skipped just like son's friend. It'd be like you're, it's a little bit different. I think it's another generation more, right?
Oh, is this an old joke? took you so long to get around to it that I fell asleep in the middle of it.
God,
took a nap because I'm old, and woke back up, and you were still not done with that joke. So,
okay,
but I was able to piece it together from my old man experience.
Right, right. I can't believe I'm ending this podcast with me fucking up the last old person joke.
Well, maybe you'll have another shot down the road.
I know. this is ridiculous. Are you going to come back on the podcast, or have I scared you away forever?
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, I'm sure the fan mail, it'll basically be impossible for you to
fan
keep
mail.
Me out.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Or Twitter mentions.
I assume you're going to get a lot of, what do you get, DMs? What do you kids get these
all
days?
The time.
Reviews?
All the time. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what they should do, Beckley? If they liked listening to you and I banter for the past hour, they could leave a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. Goes a long way.
There you go. Yep. I know I will be doing that as soon as we hang up the phone.
I want to believe you. I want to believe you.
You know, I can't figure out how to get to the review page.
Okay. Well, that whole... Okay. Way to keep
it classy. It's a little judo for you. Little old man judo.
Well,
this has been a real pleasure. I hope you learned something, Chase.
Learned a lot. Like, not inviting Beckley Mason on any more future podcasts. That's what I learned. He's too washed.
Well,
he's too far gone.
If you learned one thing, then it was worth it.
There you go. We can find you on Twitter where you don't tweet at Beckley Mason.
Yep. That is where I am lurking.
I don't even know how to plug you. Everybody else I know how to plug, but that's just like, I don't know what else to do. Go read Bleacher Report.
Tell
Bleacher
people
Report,
if you, I will say this, if you mention me, I will reply. It's basically my inbox now. So I won't be blasting it out, but I am happy to respond to takes and or anything mean you have to say about Chase.
Okay. And also just follow me back on Twitter. What the hell is that? Once you're on my podcast,
did you follow me?
Like,
I'll do that now.
I don't think I did, actually. But you can go ahead and do that.
Yeah.
I'll follow you
well,
back.
There you go.
Okay. I feel like we're there now, Beckley. It's the least you could do.
All
right, Beckley. Well, this was great.
Did I scroll through my Twitter to end it? There you are. Chase. Oh, you have a blue check. Look at you. Boom.
Yeah.
Following. Done.
Bam. Beckley Mason, Chase Thomas. The two generations collide. On future podcasts. We'll see. Use the
later,
BR live code, get league pass.
Yeah, there you go.
And we can actually talk more hoops next time you're on the podcast.
All right, later, brother.
And that'll do it for today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. I just want to remind you guys, if you like today's episode and you are subscribed on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, I would really appreciate if you could take a second, leave the show a 5-star rating and a review. If you're not an Apple Podcast listener, remember, you can find the show on Spotify, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Be sure to check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com, where you can access all of my previous episodes and also find all my writing. I'm writing there fairly often. And also follow me on Twitter at Chase_Thomas and like the Facebook page at Facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. Thank you for your support, and we'll be back another episode very soon. Thanks, guys.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a 4-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.